Righto. What's the one thing you want for your teenager? I hear you ask. You want them to be happy. Of course you do. You want to protect them from life's crap. Well, you can't. Crap's going to happen and will keep on happening. That's life. I'm supposed to be the positive one, they say. Well, what you can do is help them prepare for it. And the best way to prepare them is to piss them off into the bush. I didn't write this, but that is funny. To piss them off into the bush together. Resilience for Families by Resilience Builders takes you and your child to Cradle Mountain in the stunning wilderness of Tasmania. Over 4 days, you'll learn proven techniques to cope with life's crap and live a happier life. You'll do the things you never thought possible, and you'll do them together, building your resilience and your bond. The next Resilience for Families Cradle Mountain program runs in September. Search Resilience Builders or call them on 1-300-001-606. That's 1-300-001-606. Thanks, Resilience Builders. Boom. There it is, a live read. Melissa, you can just let that roll. Good morning to you, Melissa. Oh, it's just gone midday. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Harper. How are you?
Look, I'm bursting out of my fucking flannel as I do on a Tuesday. Is it Tuesday? It's Tuesday. I've done a little bit of research this morning. I've got a meeting with my supervisor at 2:30. She terrifies me. She's like Mary Poppins and Superman all in one. She looks like Mary Poppins, but she's still a bit scary. And way smarter than me. So how's your morning been?
It's been good, thank you. Very good. Yeah.
Really?
Yep, we are tying up a few things ready for tomorrow night's excellent series and, yeah, just getting back to some...
Oh, I love how you just chuck in a promo there like you're not even chucking...
Now, by the time this is live, that'll already be started. Oh, right. What were you going to say?
Right. Oh, what is the excellent series? Oh, what is that about? Yeah, well... We're always wheeling out new things. Some things work great, some don't. It's a living and learning experience and process. The U Project is going awesome. We hit 200. I took a picture last night, Melissa, because I'm a fucking geek at 10 to 12, and we were 201,000 listens over the last 4 weeks. And I'm like, I'm proud of me.
You do realize that you didn't have to wait up till 10 to 12. You could have just adjusted the dates, right?
Shut up.
Just saying.
Don't rain on my parade. Reference. When I'm doing a happy dance, don't come and piss on my happy dance with your fucking reality check.
Sorry, that is awesome news. That is great news. I was just more or less thinking for your sleeping patterns that I didn't want you waiting up till 2 minutes to midnight.
I was awake. Yeah. Because we did the last night of our 12-week mentoring group. We didn't finish till 10. Then I ate my dinner at stupid o'clock and then I needed to let my brain wind down. Anyway, today on the podcast, everyone's going, get the fuck on with the show. Today, I've got a friend of mine. So this is good. So this man and I used to work together. We've broken bread together many times, had coffee together, eaten lunch together, hung out together, connected, philosophized about the meaning of life and our existential crisis that we all inhabit, whatever that means. And his name's Pezza or Perry. Hi, mate. How are you?
Oh, g'day, Craigo. What a great intro. I feel like we're actually connected to the hip right now.
Well, we are. We are. We're brothers from another mother. Hey, so just to give everyone a quick snapshot, and you chuck in whatever bits I miss out. So Perry and I worked in one of my gyms for a long time. He's a trainer. He's an exercise professional. He's a nutritionist. He's just finished his master's in nutrition. He's doing more study, more postgrad study now. And, you know, has been around for a very long time and is highly regarded in the fitness industry in Victoria, does lots of stuff with athletes, with figures competitors and bodybuilders and prepping people for shows, and more broadly, just working with the general community and the general population about getting in shape and creating optimal health and performance and function. And he's really fucking good at it. So, and he just finished his master's. So I was very excited for him and very proud of him. Not that he needs me to be proud, but how was it going back to study at 200 years of age, mate, like me?
Well, you know, it was an interesting thing. I had to sort of get rid of the old crayons and they wouldn't let me use a blackboard to be able to put my notes up there. So that was a little bit upsetting. But, you know, apart from that, it was a little bit daunting to actually understand how to, let's say, go through uni and say, well, this is how we log on. What's a log on?
Yeah,
you know, trying to work that out a little bit. And I'm like, okay, so we've logged on, now what happens? And it's like, there's my class, in the screen? Where are the students? Why can't I see anyone? What is this, a lecturer? All this noise in the background, that's someone actually talking to me. So yeah, it was a little bit of a big learning curve. And I remember my first assignment, it took me 2 weeks just to try and explain the definition of fructose when I was realizing I was trying to find research papers where I could have just opened up any book and gone, this is fructose. So yes.
You could have just fucking Googled it, son. But at least you were being thorough.
Wait, what's a Google?
Isn't it a measure of energy?
Oh, and I dynamically think something or other, yeah.
Fucking hell, I don't know. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm the same. I've been trying to send my work into Monash via carrier pigeon, but I'm not sure that they're getting it because I've been receiving no receipts, you know.
It depends what you feed your carrier pigeon, Craig.
That's true. That's true. Are you still, so when did we first meet? Like, when did you start doing stuff up at the Dome? That was that like, I don't know, 95 or?
No, it was at the end of 1999, I come and did the course down there next door to, let's say the Caulfield branch, I think it was.
Right.
And then from there, you just opened up Brighton. And I started working from there in the year 2000. Yeah. So that's how long it goes. Like, you know, before like even TV was invented or anything like that at all.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that was when carrier pigeons were the dominant kind of method of delivery system for any kind of interaction between humans. So that was 21 years ago. So you're still training people. I know you do more than that, but you're still working with clients one-on-one and training them.
Yeah, by all means. I've transgressed across from, let's say, doing a lot of the bodybuilding stuff and helping a lot of females with figure competition and bikini competitions, and traverse more now to helping, let's say, people our age and just trying to get them to move a bit better and understand the power of nutrition as well. But the most important thing is to be able to let people know that, you know, just your age is not going to be a factor to slow you down from achieving new things. So it's getting people out there. Let's get you moving. Let's get you to be able to touch your toes, pick up a weight, twist around, don't hurt your back. And hey, this is what you should be eating to give yourself a little bit more oomph in life. And so you don't get sick and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And it's, you know, the thing is, I think sometimes with, you know, with food and with exercise and with sleep and with energy in and out and with progressive overload and Pilates and step into this and walk away from that and fucking CrossFit. And it can be a little bit overwhelming with people, you know, because when people want to go, you know, if you're clueless, as in you don't, you know, you're not educated in this space and you're starting out and you open that fitness door, there's so many fucking other doors where you go, I don't know where to start, you know, and the same with the food question. Because a lot of people, Pezza, you tell me what you think, but I feel like a lot of people with exercise and with food are quite, it's like they have their own philosophy on food or their own philosophy on exercise. And that almost becomes their religion. And it becomes a very kind of bias thing rather than an objective scientific thing.
Oh, look, totally agree with that. I find that with exercise, people come in and they want to explain to me, you know, why they should be doing bicep curls or why they should be doing heavy squatting. And I'm like, well, you're just moving in one plane. How about we teach you to move in all three planes? Because in the reality of life, when you walk down those stairs, you're going to have to twist and turn and reach down and pick up a bag and, you know, open the car door and step in and step out sideways. So, you know, trying to make it a little bit simplistic and make people realize there's another way out there and not to overcomplicate it. The same goes with nutrition, Craig. I find that people will come in and I said, oh, I've been following this diet plan or, you know, my mate's doing keto or, you know, I'm thinking of becoming a vegan. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. Let's look at the reasons why you want to do this and how you're feeling when you do this. And if you're getting headaches and you've got no energy and you only go to the toilet once a week, maybe we need to reconsider what you're doing and have a bit more of a whole view approach, something that makes it a bit easier rather than complicating things and going, this is what I should be doing no matter what. And it's like, oh, you know what? There's a couple of different ways to do stuff and there's no need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, I'm with you. And also, and we've spoken about this many times, but also just coming into the process, understanding that there is no single best way to do anything that works for everybody, because everybody, literally body, not person, but everybody is different. unless you're an identical genetic twin. But there's no other body in the world, thankfully, that is exactly like my body, exactly. And so therefore, I need to figure out in my 57-year-old endomorphic self what's going to work for me with sleep, with hydration, with food, with micros, with macros, with movement, with, as you said, moving in three planes, not one plane. By the way, everyone, keep bench pressing. ignore him. He doesn't know. But you're so right, mate, because we think there's this one-dimensional approach to doing stuff where, you know, it's like if someone ate what you eat and trained how you train and had the same amount of sleep as you, and they're not going to look or feel or function like you because they're not Perry.
Yeah, look, totally agree with that, Craig. One of the biggest things that I've learned in the industry and trying to teach people is to say, try and unlearn what you've learned. Just have an open mind. Just come in here and let's try something. And if you're going to try something, give it 8 to 12 weeks and be objective with the results that you get. Don't sit there and go, well, in Men's Health, it says I should have lost 28 kilos. So, you know, I'm going to lose 28 kilos as well. And when you only lose 2, you're wondering what you've done wrong and you beat yourself up, and on goes the cheesecake and the pavlova for breakfast, and you're wondering why things are going backwards for you.
Yeah.
So it's just letting people go, you know what? Just if you're going to try something, give it a shot. What's the reason behind it? Is there any science behind it? How is that going to apply to you for your makeup, your lifestyle, who you are, your genetic, let's say, disposition to food and nutrition? And then say, all right, cool. Has this worked for you? Yes, it has. Beautiful. Let's keep doing it. No, it hasn't. Well, let's create some change. Let's pick one or two things so it's simplistic, not difficult, so you can apply this to your everyday life and go, hey, I'm better. You know, yeah. Like I had a client the other day. The only thing we did was change their sleep cycle from where they were sleeping 4 hours a night and then, you know, watching TV from, let's say, 8 o'clock till midnight and then going to bed. It was like, how about you turn off your TV, read a book and go to bed at 10 o'clock and let's see how you feel. Within 2 weeks, they're finding themselves are a lot more calm. They started to drop weight and they hadn't changed anything in the nutrition. All they did was just change their sleep cycle.
Yeah, that's so true. It seems like with a lot of stuff in the human experience and in, you know, when you think about life beyond our body and food and exercise, but you think about the bigger picture, you know, relationships and making money and building a bit, you and I were talking before we started rolling, you've got a meeting with your business coach later, all this stuff, right? Where we have business coaches and accountants and we have, you know, financial planners, and we're very strategic. Often we're very strategic and practical and processy and even sciencey with all the rest of our life. But when it comes to our body, we're like hit and miss, you know, yeah.
Whereas sometimes too,
I think your biggest project should be managing your physical, mental, and emotional health. That's your number one project. Because if you can't manage your mind, emotions, and body, then you can't manage anything else well. You'll fake it and you'll stumble through it. But if, and I always say this to executives, if you rock up to work and when you get to work and your job is to lead and inspire and coach and solve problems and create outcomes and provide energy and, you know, be it a he or she and whatever role and whatever company, if that's your job and you turn up to work most days at 4 out of 10, not only are you fucked, your team's fucked.
Yeah, exactly. If you can't lead by example, if you can't promote what you're trying to be, it's not going to work. And mindset, like you said, mindset is such a critical thing, because you might want to change your food, but you get up in the morning and you go, oh, can't be fucked eating this. I don't want my protein shake, or I don't want my eggs with avocado, or I'm not going to eat till 2 o'clock in the afternoon because I feel like that. Well, if you let emotion get in the way of trying to make a decision, if you allow your emotions to get in the way of what you're trying to create, I believe that will be one of the areas where you're actually going to fail, because you're not allowing something, let's say, that's scientific or planned out or strategic to actually get you to the end result. You're allowing your emotions to get in the way because you don't feel like it today.
Yeah, that's an ongoing battle though, isn't it? Because we're emotional creatures, and it's, you're right. And that's been, you know, I mean, I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but I'm sure you're aware of it, but I've said to my listeners 1,000 times, like, for me, self-control around grog or booze or cigarettes or whatever has never, grog, booze, same thing, booze, exercise, lifestyle, none of that's been a real challenge. My only challenge has been food, because I fucking love food, right? And I can get fat really quickly. I have that gift, you know?
You're lucky. And so you're the chosen one, Craig.
Yeah, I'm like Jesus, but a fat version. You know, if it was the loaves and fishes, I would have fucking eaten those loaves and fishes and everyone else would have gone hungry. No, I would have given them some. But, you know, and that's the thing, is trying to manage our mind and our emotions. And I reckon a lot of people don't really understand what an emotional and a psychological journey it is to eat well. Like, it's not just about, here's a plan, you've got a plan, go and execute it. Yeah, well, if it was that easy, we'd just fucking do it. But the truth is, you chuck a human in the middle of the process and it becomes complicated.
Well, the best thing I ever hear when I give someone, they come up to me and they're all motivated. They're like, Craig, I want to lose weight, Pezza. I want to get on top. I want to change my life. My doctor's just told me I've got 6 months, whatever. I'm like, cool. This is what you need to do. And they're just sitting there looking at it going, it's too hard. Mm. And I'm in shock. I'm like, what do you mean it's too hard? Like, is it too hard to eat? Like, you can't bite it? It's too hard? Or, well, it's just too hard, Pez. I'm like, why can't you eat this? You just don't understand. And I'm like, well, explain it to me so I can understand why it's too hard, because you've been told you've got 6 months, but you can't change your life. So here is the success story. This is what you need to do. It's like I've just given you the six numbers to Tats Lotto. You're going to win six. No, you're going to kill it. And you decide to put three down. And I'm like, it's too hard to put the other three numbers in. So, you know, this is your forte. This is where you're good at, the mind stuff. For me, it's like, eat this, do it, or I'll, you know, poke in the eye. It's, you know, that's my methodology.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I think one of the challenges, and we're going to talk about specific food stuff in a moment, but one of the challenges is that, you know, let's say my blood pressure's high and my body fat's high and my fucking health is low and my fucking cholesterol's through the roof and my blood sugar's through the roof, and the doctor sends me to you and you go, mate, cool. And you do some measuring and testing and we sit down and I give you my goals and my background and you go, okay, here's an eating plan for you. The challenge for me, if I'm like many people and like I was for a long time in my life, is that while your plan is good and your information is good and your advice is great, it's not a quick process. And I like quick. I like instant gratification. I want to eat something now and feel good fucking now, because, and my listeners are probably sick of me saying this, but the thing is, if I eat the cake, I get instant gratification. But if I avoid the cake and eat the boring fucking salad or whatever it is you want me to eat, you fucking monster, right? If I eat that, I don't get instant weight loss. So fuck your plan. Yeah. Is there a pill? Is there a pill, Pezza?
Well, there's a hammer. I've got a hammer that I give my clients that works, and just say, you know, hit yourself in the head when you got to eat that cake.
This is a genuine question. I don't know what you think about this, but say someone comes to you and they've been eating a certain way for 45 years, right? They're 45 years old and they've never been in optimal health. They've always been a little bit out of shape. And over the last 5-10 years, now they're really out of shape and they're 45 and they rock up. So that 45-year-old person turns up and they've got a lifetime worth of programming, right? Mm-hmm. A lifetime worth of conditioning and a relationship with food. Do you think sometimes that it's better to go to make small changes and progress rather than try and turn their life upside down in a day?
Totally agree with that. And I work in a different process with stuff. If I've got someone like that and I've gone, right, we've got 45 years of poor conditioning, your mindset is that you must eat that cake. I'm like, okay, keep eating that cake. But instead of that really big piece, you know, that at least 500 grams of cake, let's have 200 this time. Mm-hmm. And now let's pick one thing that you can feasibly change to create a better, healthy environment nutritionally wise. So they might decide, for example, instead of having 10 cups of coffee a day, they'll have two. Or they might go, you know what? I'm going to have breakfast today because I feel that's going to help me. Or instead of a salad bowl, I'm going to have a proper meal. So one small change, and I'll make them accountable for that. So I then get them to contact me every time they have that one meal. So for the first 2 weeks, I try and help them create a new habit just by changing one thing. The other thing I like to do with people that have been conditioned over a long period of time is to sit there and say to them, where do you think you'll be in 2 years? And I give them an example. I go, for example, John Smith has lost 20 kilos in 2 years. And it did take him time, but look at the before and after shots. This can be you. How much do you want this? I'll be with you for the whole journey. I'll support you. I'll guide you. I'll educate you. I will make you understand the benefits of you changing your nutritional habits to the new body you can be. Because at 45, your hormones are starting to change. You're starting to go backwards. Your longevity is going to get cut down short. How about we start creating some change, small changes over a 2 year period to get somewhere? And guess what? Every 2 weeks, you will see some small changes. Your clothes will start to get a little bit looser on you. You'll start to have a bit more energy. You won't be waking up 4 or 5 times in the middle of the night to go to the toilet. And these small physiological changes will in turn end up being something you can look in the mirror and go, hey, my gut's starting to disappear. Or if you like jumping on the scales, which I'm not a big fan of, I've dropped a few kilos. And that's how I try and help them out, right?
Yeah. And I think also that, you know, some people would have heard you say 20 kilos in 2 years and they'd be going, fuck that. But I'm with you. You know, the thing is, we know that when we lose weight fast, we're not losing fat for a start. You know, we're losing water and muscle and then eventually a bit of fat, right? Mm-hmm. And correct. People get really perplexed. Like I remember, fucking, I don't know, 200 years ago when you and I were 20, I remember doing a workshop and explaining and this to, you know, the how I could weigh 90 kilos in the morning and 93 at night. They're like, well, that's impossible. I go, no, it's not. Not only is it not impossible, it's probable, right? Mm. And then I had to explain, and I said, look, how much do you weigh? And I can't remember what they said, but let's say they said 70 kilos. I said, right. Now, if right now you drank a liter of water and then you got back on the scales, you would weigh 71, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that's because we just put 1 kilogram of water in your body. So you are temporarily heavier, you know, and it's like in the morning, we're lighter through the day, depending on what we do. But most people are heavier at the end of the day. And it's not because you're fatter at the end of the day. It's because you're holding more food in your body, or you need to go and snap one off, back one out, shoot one off to Werribee, call it what you want, or you're more hydrated than you were when you got on the scales in your dehydrated state this morning. But what we know is also that the slower within reason, the more likely it is to stick, right?
Correct, yeah. And look, I mean, we did a bit of research on some of the shows like The Biggest Loser, and we looked at the transgression of weight in that, you know, 12-week period where they're losing, you know, crazy amounts like 40 kilos. And it was interesting to see and interview people 2 to 3 years later. A lot of those people have put most of that weight back on. And that was the sad thing because, you know, there's obviously a lot of other factors involved, like, you know, their environment, psychological situation. They didn't have a chef to cook all their food and stuff like that. But it showed they lost all this weight. It was all that, whoo-ha, yeah, you've done really well. And then 2 years later, they're like, we're back to that 200 kilo mark again. And that's sad. That's really, really sad because I've lost, like you said, more muscle than fat. So now their metabolism has slowed down more. And there's a lot of other science behind that. I won't get into it now, but the reasons why we found these people that lost their weight so quick, and it has a lot to do with ghrelin and leptin, that they actually couldn't stop eating. The hunger never got satisfied and they put that weight back on. And it's really sad. It's really sad to see, Craig.
So get a little bit sciencey for a moment. So when they lose a lot of weight fast, and then that they're never satisfied when that, tell us what's happening.
Okay, so one of the hormones that we find that works in the body is ghrelin and leptin. They're the ones, let's say the hormone that makes you feel hungry, which is ghrelin, and leptin gives you that sense of satiety. What they were thinking is that they were thinking that if we eat a meal and then drop the weight and pull them down, we have a suggested calorific deficit, so therefore you should eat less food. So if they're, let's say, 200 kilos and they're eating 4,000 calories, well, if they've gone down to 100 kilos, then they should be eating, let's say, now 1,000 or 2,000 calories. And what they're finding is they go, well, scientifically, this is where you should be. So they've done their body mass index, they've done DEXA scans, so they know the exact, what we call fat-free mass to calculate what their protein intake be, et cetera. But what they were finding is that where they thought the ghrelin would shoot up and then drop down again once they'd have a meal, ghrelin wasn't elevated as much as what they thought, but it would never come back to baseline zero. So it was always that little bit higher. So if they were meant to be, let's say, on round numbers on a 1,000-calorie diet, they actually needed 1,200 or 1,300 calories to have some form of satiety. But that extra 300-400 calories every week would build up and build up, so then the weight would creep up. So then that 1,300 would become 1,400, then 1,400 would become 1,500. And within 2 years, I'll back up to eating, you know, 3,000-4,000 calories and putting all the weight back on. So now more research has been done to try and understand the effects of ghrelin in the body, especially with someone that's been obese and overweight for a long, long period of time. What's going on within the intestinal organs there that are stimulating this response that's allowing ghrelin not to go back to zero?
Mm. Yeah. And just for people who want to do some research on that, I think it's ghrelin. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. And leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, one of the interesting things about that show and shows like that is that, this is not an attack in any way. It's just a reflection and a commentary, because it's true, is that they, so all these people get put, I mean, firstly, it's a TV show and the priority is ratings. And I understand that. It's a business. The bottom line is the bottom line. The bottom line is, does it work as a TV experience? Is it making money? Are the numbers good? If the numbers are good, we get advertisers. If we get advertisers with a show that's doing great numbers, we make lots of money. That's the priority. Mm. It just happens to be that the show is about people losing weight, right? Which is not to say anything bad is going on, but the problem, as you suggest, is so people get taken out of their real life and then they get put into this, it's not the right term, but it'll do for now, this artificial environment.
Mm.
Where they've got chefs and TV crews and lighting and they're wearing a microphone all the time and there's this ever-present entourage of televisionato around them. I just made that word up, Melissa. You can push that out of the verbal dictionary, the verbal nest into the world. And so they've got this support crew. So they're changing their behavior and they're changing their lifestyle, but they're not changing their default setting. You know, exactly. So when they get out of this temporary existence that they're in, which is great, and then they get put back into their regular existence without all the support, without the cheer squad, without the attention, without the media stuff, and now they're back in central, you know, Foxville, right, down Main Street, mm-hmm. and they're walking past the bakery, and there's no, you know, you go, of course I'm going to have a pie, because that cognitive kind of default setting stuff, that deep subconscious programming hasn't really been addressed. So of course it is, there are hormonal and endocrine issues, as you said, but there's also this psychological component that if we temporarily change our behavior, but we don't permanently change our thinking or our programming, we're probably always going to default back to where we were.
Yeah, I mean, you're being put back into the environment where the stimuli are back the same again. You've got your friends that are eating crap. You're walking past, you know, some of these junk food places. So your brain just goes, let's go back there. When I was up in Sydney a while ago, I was working with one of the trainers up there that was allocated to the people that get kicked off the show. So during the program, one or two get kicked off, they get sent home, but then they're brought back on the show to show them that, hey, we've maintained our weight loss. So they were given an allocated trainer. And what it was, when I was up in Sydney, I was talking to that trainer and going, well, we've had a lot of problems with this girl. She's not losing any more weight. If anything, she's putting on weight. She reckons she gets from her home. She walks an hour and a half to get to my PT studio. She then trains for 2 hours. And, you know, the typical, let's flog someone to death and not eat anything. And then she walks back home. And so she's doing 4 or 5 hours a day and not losing any weight. The trainer decided one day, I'm going to actually go to her house and see how fast she walks from home. Well, the client was actually walking to the bus stop, from the bus stop going to, let's say, a donut shop, sitting there eating, you know, 6 to 10 donuts, and then getting back on the bus and going to the PT and lying to the PT saying, oh, that was a big walk. So, yeah, that's the old story of being put back into your own environment, going back to old habits and really not giving a shit about the consequences of what you're doing. Because, you know, yeah. You're basically poisoning your body and you're killing yourself through the wonders of nutrition and fast food that's out there.
And it is tough for, it is genuinely tough for people, because I feel like that Biggest Loser competitor sometimes, or I don't so much these days, but back in the day, you know, I really struggled. And because, you know, blokes like you and the other boys and girls that worked with me at the Harper Dome, who could fucking just eat whatever you want, I couldn't, you know. And so for me, it was an ongoing thing of just of willpower and discipline and self-control, but you can't just white knuckle it for 10 years, you know, like something has to happen inside, you know? Mm. So for that person, whoever it was, guy or girl, God bless them. Like I believe that people need to, you know, they can have a Perry in their life, or they can have a chef, and they can have a cheer squad, and they can have information and education and resources and degrees out their ass. But until that person, because it was the same with me, mate, until I got to the point where, and not in a self-loathing way, a self-awareness way, until I got to the point where I went, I'm the fucking problem. Mm. It's not my genetics. It's not mum and dad's fault. It's not society. It's not culture. It's not fucking McDonald's fault. It's not, it's me, because I'm making these decisions and I'm eating this shit.
Mm.
And until you get to that point, you know, where you are just honest, you know, just honest. And it doesn't mean that you're never going to have a bit of cake or never have a beer or whatever. But I think that's, you know, that's a really important part of it as well. But enough psychology. Let's talk about nutrition, because you're fucking got a master's degree in it. So let's go there.
Yeah, I had to pay for that though, Craig. So, you know.
It's... Yeah, I know. You did have to pay for it, but you also had to work for it too. What are some of the, you know, some of the things that get wheeled out that kind of frustrate you, some of the myths or some of the silly ideas? And we're not here to run anyone down, but like, for example, carbs got a really bad rap for a long time. What's the current thinking around carbs? Are carbs the enemy? Are they the devil? Are they okay? What's the go right now with carbs?
Okay. So what's happened is, I mean, we went through this, you know, 98% fat-free diet, and everyone was thinking fats was the issue, and that got kicked out the door. So, well, the next thing we said, well, let's get rid of carbs, because like you said, people like a quick fix. We get rid of carbs, and all of a sudden you're losing all this water weight, and you're thinking, hey, I'm losing weight, and that's all that matters. That's all you're interested in. Well, that's really a bad thing, because of the fact carbohydrates is actually just an energy source. Carbs don't make you fat. It's simple as that. And for you, all the listeners out there, I'll say it again. Carbs do not make you fat. It's very, very simple. Carbs is an energy source, and you need energy. One of the interesting studies that were done a while ago is that we had people on a high protein, high fat, low carbohydrate diet. And what happened was, when we reintroduced carbohydrates back into the body, 60% of that carbohydrates was driven into the brain so that brain could function more effectively. So that was a big, hello, what's carbohydrates doing? Then the next thing was, when we look at a physical response, what we're finding is that people were actually had the ability to lift heavier weights, to move quicker, to exercise at a greater intensity. By working at a greater intensity, you're therefore burning more energy. You're burning more energy, the old equation of energy in versus energy out. Well, guess what? You're going to burn more fat by eating carbs to give you more energy to train more effectively. So with carbs getting a bad rap, it's like my clients freak out when I give them an eating plan and I give them, hey, you can have potatoes, you can have rice, you can have pasta. And they're like, I think this plan is for someone else. I'm like, nah, it's all for you. It's all good. Look at all the other vegetables you've got. Look at all the good protein sources you've got. Eat away and you watch what happens. And the complaint I get is, one, it's too much food. And two, a few weeks later, they're going, oh, my jeans are falling off me. And my wife's not happy that I have to redo my wardrobe again.
Wow, what a terrible problem to have. You know, it's funny you say that about 60% of the glucose went to their brain, because the brain works primarily on, well, I mean, the brain's 90% water, and the brain runs on glucose. So if your carb, you know, intake is very low, it's a fact. Your brain, especially initially anyway, won't work as well, for want of a less sciencey term. And also, you know, carbs are stored in the muscle as glycogen. if your carb intake is very low, then you're not going to have that energy in the muscles to train hard, you know. And the whole people go, but what about gluconeogenesis? Said nobody in my audience ever. But there's this, you know, so the body has an ability to make carbohydrate out of non-carbohydrate sources, but it's not the most efficient way to get carbs, that's for sure.
That's correct. It's a much easier
way. Unless you're an Eskimo living in the middle of wherever and you don't have, I don't think you meant to use that word. Maybe is it Inuit? I'm sorry, whatever the word is, I'm not trying to be inappropriate, but people who live like in the middle of Alaska that have got no access to any fruit and veggies and they have a high fat, high protein diet, you know, but still it's a hard way to get all of those needs for your body, glycogen and glucose and all of that energy. It's hard to get that met. Tell us a little bit about types of carbs. Lollies are carbs, sweet potatoes carbs. Surely you're not saying it doesn't make any difference.
Okay, so what happens is carbohydrates, they absorb at different rates through the body and are also absorbed in different areas in the body. So for example, I've had clients that go, I don't need fruit because fruit is a carbohydrate and it's got sugar, so therefore it's going to make me fat. And I'm like, well, let's understand fruit, fructose, which is a different type of sugar, absorbs in a different process into the body. It doesn't go through the gut wall straight away. It actually gets metabolized through the liver before it gets absorbed. So eating fruit isn't really the big issue here. Other forms of carbohydrates, like you're talking about lollies, as compared to, let's say, eating, a sweet potato, a lolly will have a very simple type of carbohydrate, which will absorb quickly in the body. Now, if you only have one or two lollies and there's only maybe 3, 4, 5 grams of carbohydrates in there, that's fine. Your body's going to utilize that as energy. It's going to absorb it and utilize it as a fuel source. It's the other stuff that's in the lolly that would worry me. The artificial coloring or the synthetic flavoring, etc. That would be more of a detriment than what I'd see. But you know, that sugar source is still going to be utilized as an energy source. It's still going to get converted down into a blood glucose to be either stored or manipulated as energy in any form or fashion. Now, if you have a potato, a white potato or a sweet potato, that still is a carbohydrate. That still gets converted into a simple sugar to be used as blood glucose within the body itself. So all carbs are there. They're going to be converted in the same process. It's the amount of carbohydrate you have in one sitting, how fast that carbohydrate gets in the body to stimulate an insulin response, and how that carbohydrate is going to be utilized as a fuel source. Because if you're eating excess carbs, if you're having pasta for breakfast, rice for lunch, and 20 potatoes at dinner for night, well, after a while, you've filled up your stores so high, what's going to happen is that excess energy is then going to be converted into a fat within the body itself. Mm. So carbs are fine. There's no problems there. And there are different ones, and they are going to work effectively. You just got to know what's going to work well for you, what's not going to make you fall sleepy after a meal, and what's not going to cause you this massive sugar rush where you're shaking and wondering and then have a crash half an hour later when you're looking for food. And guess what? You look for something sweet again to try and bring your blood sugars back up.
And also, I guess, as you said, one or two lollies is going to have 4 or 5 grams of sugar, depending on the lollies. But we're not saying have 30 or 40 lollies.
No.
As you said, we're not saying have potatoes are fine, just don't have 26.
That's
it. Now back to the news.
Well, I mean, you know, the biggest one that gets me, Craig, is when people go, look, I've cut out putting sugar in my coffee. I'm like, yeah, so what else have you eaten? Oh, well, I had my pizza and I had this and I had that. And I had my pasta for lunch. And then, look, mum cooked me up a meal and, you know, we had to have the potatoes and rice with the chicken. And I'm sitting there going, so you've worried about the 1 teaspoon of sugar, which is 3.5 grams of carbohydrates, which is bugger all energy. That's what you're worried about and not everything else. Yeah. So, yeah, that surprised me, that one.
Yeah. And what about the fact, Pezza, that our energy requirements are not static? So, you know, if I'm sitting in my lab coat, as I do pretty much every morning, I get up, put on my lab coat. That's definitely not true. But I'm sitting in my cubicle, hunched over my laptop like an academic weirdo, just fucking cranking out data or researching. And I spend 14 or 15 hours a day, which I never do, by the way, but let's in this pretend story. and I moved three times, you know, but compared to the day after when I go for a run, I lift some weights, and I'm out and about and I'm on my feet all day and I'm moving all day. So one day to the next, I might literally need double the calories, right? Mm-hmm. Double the energy because my energy expenditure is twice, or I'm definitely going to need more energy to, you know, break even. How do you talk to people about, or what are your thoughts around, because our energy needs vary day to day, just like our sleep needs or our water needs, you know, what about when someone's following something which is static, that's like same amount of calories every day, is there room for flexibility?
Yeah, well, there is. Well, Craig, what we've done is we've actually drifted away from looking at life energy expenditure and intake on a daily basis. We've actually scrapped that because we do realize there are so many variables that can occur in a day. Like even sitting there studying for 18 hours, your brain's going at 100 miles an hour. There are other stresses that might be involved. You know, you're trying to analyze stuff and you're not realizing you're actually using a lot more energy than what you think. You're not just sitting there. So what we've now done is we've decided to look at your energy expenditure over a whole week, and then we look at your calorific intake for that whole week. And we say, well, if you've used up, let's say, 10,000 calories, well, if we want to keep you in a deficit, we're going to have you eating 9,800 calories this week. And that's how we do it. So you could still be steady state dieting. You could still be eating the same food every day, and your energy requirements might be different. If at the end of the week, we look at that figure and we compare that to what you've eaten, that's all that we really worry about, unless you're a high-performance athlete. And I know, Craig, that's where you're bordering at the moment with your training. Yep, yep. And there it is. Look at those guns, mate. Come on. There's a couple of sweet potatoes in there, mate. I can see it. So what happens is if you're a high-performance athlete, well, those rules change. But for general pop, no, we try and keep it simplistic. We go, what was your week like? How was your food like through the week? Let's compare it. Energy in, energy out. And that's making it real easy for people. You know, we do look at, you know, we look at, let's say, macronutrients and micronutrients when we get fussy. We do look at, you know, the different ratios of food all through the day and timing of food. So the chrononutrition of food. But they're all small aspects that build up for the final product of energy in versus energy out. And you can't just look at that one thing. You can't say, well, I'm going to eat 2,000 calories today and I've released 2,000 bits of energy. We need to look at that macronutrient breakdown, because if you have a diet, let's say we're going to look at two diets, let's say, and they're both 2,000 calories. The first one is 1,800 calories from protein and fat and only 200 calories from carbohydrates, as compared to the other diet, which is 1,000 from carbohydrates and the other 1,000 from protein and fats. If you maintain that diet for 4 weeks, your body composition would be completely different. Your emotional output would be very different. Your brain processing would be very different, even though you're still eating 2,000 calories a day. So that's why we can't just look at one factor. We'd have to look at everything. We have to look at that macronutrient breakdown. And what people really do overlook is the micronutrient stuff. And that's where a nutritionist or a dietitian or a geek gets involved and goes, right, this is what we should be looking at, the minimum requirements. How can we now build that up into your nutritional intake so that you're healthy? And the byproduct of it being healthy is not to carry excess body fat.
Yeah, perfect. Love it. And when we're, if anyone's just going, what are micros and macros? Just explain to people what that, there'd be 3 out of 10 people who are not clear on that. What's a macronutrient and what's a micronutrient?
Okay, so to make it simple, a macronutrient are your carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. So that's the real basic version of it. And the micronutrients are all the smaller stuff, like your calcium, magnesium, your zinc, your sodium, etc. They're the little things that we need to look at. Because a lot of people overlook that when they're doing an eating plan, or if they have some sort of a restrictive diet where they're eating, let's say, a ketogenic diet, or they're a vegan, or whatever they're trying to do, when they're doing a restrictive sort of eating regime, what can happen is they can miss out on some of these vital micronutrients that play really important roles in how the body functions. And so they can't understand why they're feeling crap or shit and they're going, but I'm eating so well and I'm following the plan to the T. And then you look at it and they might be lacking something that's going, well, this is what's causing your body not to function effectively. So even though your main concern is to lose weight, your body itself is not functioning at optimal performance.
Yeah, because there's more to wellness and optimal performance than just weight. That's a very valid point. Some people are completely obsessed only with their weight. And I love what you said at the start of the show too. We'll come back to where we're at right now, but it is so important, you know, that you're moving in those three planes of movement, because we don't do life in a single plane. In fact, it very little, you know, other than sitting at a desk, perhaps looking at a screen. But, you know, when we're moving, we're always moving in space and time differently, and we're always off balance, or we're always picking up things which are away from our center of gravity. And, you know, so that getting in the gym and making your body functionally strong versus gym strong is a completely different conversation. I like that.
Well, Craig, just to follow on with that, well, we realize that all those different movements, there's a lot more neural excitation in how the body works. What fires the nervous system are the micronutrients like your sodium, potassium, magnesium, and calcium. They're vital things to actually stimulate a neural response into the muscle. So if you are lacking in those nutrients, micronutrients, and then you try to move, you're going to feel like crap. You're not going to be able to move effectively. And this is where, you know, my role as from personal trainer / nutritionist comes into play. And so, well, wait on, if you're going to be doing like this, it's okay to add salt to your food. It's okay to do this. It's okay to do that. And to let people have a bit more of an open-mindedness. And again, as we said before, to try and unlearn what you've learned. Forget what you know. Let's try something different. Let's see how you feel. Because that's the most important thing. How do you feel?
G'day, team. So we thought we'd wrap it up there because, as is often the way with myself, I got a little verbose and a little curious, and the conversation went longer than intended. So we're going to wrap it up there for the moment, and we will be back tomorrow with part two. See you soon.